And good afternoon and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Laron Landis. Patty Fink is taking this week off. She's down in New Orleans taking care of her father-in-law. And she'll be back next week because she's the
Grand Marshal.
I was going to say the Queen of the Parade. She's the Grand Marshal of the parade.
And I'm sure she'll take that, too.
And she'll be back on Thursday, actually. Outrageous Oral is doing a presentation at S4 on Thursday. She'll be back for that because she's one of the presenters, and then she'll be back for the parade, and, of course, she'll stop here before she runs off to the – before she runs off and is late for the parade.
Right, right.
Which she will be. Our guests today are Amanda Robinson and Cosette Kosary. Okay. And they are from Real Life Connection. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. And thank you for coming on such short notice. And we got this together really quickly. I belong to several different gay LGBT family groups, and this is through them I got in touch with you all. Just wanted to come on and talk about some gay family issues. And if you could just tell us, what is Real Life Connection?
Okay, so Real Life Connections is a nonprofit organization that focuses on at-risk youth from ages 13 to 19 years old. We host several events throughout the city, and our goal is to educate, develop, and connect those youth with resources in the community, as well as other youth in the community, and life skills. And so I founded Real Life Connections with a co-founder back about 3 years ago, and it's passionate to me because I was that kid. Mm-hmm. I could relate to a lot of the issues that young people now face, especially LGBT young people, and we are now in the middle of this civil rights fight, and I think it's time that we start including them.
Mm-hmm. And that's true. You know, when I was a kid, they just weren't out. Yeah, back in the early 1800s, they just weren't out. Kids.
No.
I came out early. I came out at about the age of 19. And I mean, that was considered early and shocking because I was, you know, still in school. And now kids are coming out at 6, 7.
The average age now that a child comes out is 13 years old.
I was just talking to somebody yesterday. She was telling me that a friend of her son came to her because his own parents would not be accepting at the age of 7.
Yeah, yeah.
To
yeah.
tell her that he was gay.
Yeah. I mean, so. And you have transgender youth that come out now as mm-hmm. early as, like you just said, 7, mm-hmm. 8. Even I think there's some even 3 or 4 that mm-hmm. can say, hey, I'm a boy or versus a girl. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I think now it's not that it hasn't been happening. I just think that we have more of an awareness of it and more of a visual to it mm-hmm. at this point. You know, back when you came out and when I came out, we didn't have social media. And so right. social media has really exposed us to the element.
Sure, that's accelerated everything.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I remember when I came out. Well, I came out the same age as you did. I'm a kid of the 80s. But I knew way before I came out. So I remember, I told David the story before. I think when I was 13 or 14, I remember getting literally out the Yellow Pages way before the internet and looking up the few gay groups that were listed and calling and asking for somebody to speak with. And they, you know, don't want to bash them, but they kind of blew me off. They had no one to speak with kids,
right.
you know. So it's wonderful that groups like yours is around now. I know before the show started, you were telling me some alarming statistics that I hadn't even heard of about LGBT youth. You want to share with some of those?
Yeah, sure. Bisexual girls rank number 1 in teen pregnancy. That's a very alarming statistic.
That's really alarming.
Most people do not associate bisexuality and teen pregnancy. 50% of LGBT youth drop out of high school. They make up 18% of the juvenile justice system. So there is definitely a straight from high school to prison pipeline.
I want to ask you about, do you have any of the reasons that you think behind these? Like teen pregnancy.
I think that's the most glaring one.
Yeah.
Teen pregnancy is oftentimes when kids come out, their parents aren't accepting. So if they're coming out at the age of 13, then they're getting kicked out of their homes oftentimes, and they have nowhere to turn. They can't get a job until they're 15 years of old. of age. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes they'll turn to tricks and prostitution. Mm.
Gotcha.
Then they can get pregnant that way. If they have a partner, they fall victim to domestic violence quite frequently, mm-hmm. as well. Dating violence is pretty high among our youth as well.
Okay,
it's
so
also one of the bigger issues, let me just kind of interject there, is no safe sex practices that are included in safe sex education at school. So
wait a minute, this is Texas. We don't have safe sex education in schools.
Absolutely, and so that's part of where some of the issues are. Actually, statistics show in some of the places where they have begun to include safe sex education in schools, their teen pregnancy numbers have been dropping. So
wait a minute, so you mean when you teach kids something, they learn it?
Absolutely.
Who would have thought?
Who knew?
Well, and before this year, LGBT youth didn't think that they would ever have the opportunity to get married. Mm-hmm. And so when abstinence till marriage is taught in schools, that doesn't apply a lot to LGBT youth until now.
Good point.
And so therefore, they need this kind of education to educate themselves.
I want to ask you some of those other statistics. 18% of the juvenile justice system are LGBT youth.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
now,
that's another one I hadn't heard before.
Yeah. Now, these are our kids.
These are our kids.
And that pisses me off. Because our kids should, you know, I like when our studies show that we make better parents,
absolutely.
That we're more responsible, that, you know, all those kinds of things. Why the juvenile justice system? What's happening there?
Well, like I just said, 50% drop out of high school. Mm-hmm. So if you dropped out of high school, you really don't have a chance at a successful life as far as career choices, living. If I've dropped out of high school, 9 times out of 10, I'm probably homeless, mm-hmm. if I'm that youth. So, you know, it's about survival. And so they turn to a life of crime as a way to survive, as a way to eat. You know,
it's not necessarily violent crime.
No,
it
not
might
at
turn
all.
Violent, but right. it's survival.
So and prostitution,
right.
All mm-hmm. of those fall into
yeah.
felony.
Yeah. And let's make a correction here. You say that those are our kids. Those are not our kids that we raised.
I'm not saying that we raised, but you know what?
As the community.
Yes, they're our kids as the community.
I do take responsibility for them as being part of our community.
And that's the problem. More of us have to start taking responsibility for them. You know, when we came out, like you just said, there's lots of organizations that exist, but very few of them have a youth-based component to what they do.
Absolutely.
And so that's where we have to begin to start.
Because it's so new.
Absolutely.
It is so new that kids are coming out at this age. The other one that you gave that is just horrendous is homelessness.
Yeah. Yes.
LGBT youth make up 40% of the homeless population.
Again, let's repeat that. 40% of the total homeless population for teens. Now, think about that for our listeners. We don't make up near that much as far as the total teen population at all. I mean, maybe, 10%?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But yet we make up 40% of the total homelessness. That is awful.
Now, this is kind of obvious, but why?
Parents not being accepting, of course.
Lack of support.
This one infuriates me.
This one infuriates me, too, because it basically means that kids are being put out.
And I've talked to attorneys about this before and said, why can't we sue their parents for child support? If you're having a kid, you're responsible for that kid till he's 18. I'm not responsible for your kid till he's 18. You're responsible for that kid till you're 18. You owe that child. If you can't have the kid in your house, you owe him child support.
But you know what? This is also Suicide Prevention Month. And one of the statistics that stand out the most to us is trans youth have a 75%
suicide attempt.
And a 45% success.
Exactly.
45% success.
That's too high.
We've been collecting a list this year because we want to host a Youth Day of Remembrance at the end of the month. We're thinking it's going to be a rally. We're still looking for a location. And of that list, so far there are about 25 victims. The most recent one is actually from Conroe, and this happened yesterday.
Hmm. Okay, so we talked about, you know, when I came out, you came out.
Wait. This was really upsetting me.
This is upsetting. But
what would drive a kid to suicide other than the way he's treated in school, the way he's treated by his parents, the way he's treated by his church?
If you look at negative labels and you look, if you like, just even like think about the labels that apply to straight individuals versus trans individuals versus gay, there's so many different names that are out there, and words do hurt.
You know, and another point to really kind of look at is when we were in school, the bully stayed at school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now the bully is in their phone. He's in their computer.
In their Facebook.
They can't
mm-hmm.
escape the bully. Versus
it's 24/7.
Exactly. For us, it was, I don't have to deal with you until I go back to school the next day, you know.
And it's also parents not backing up their own kids.
Absolutely.
And even do, it's all around. Even when you do have those few parents who will back up their children, they're not getting support from the schools.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 3 out of every 5 say that they've been mistreated by a faculty or staff member at school. And 1 out of every 3 say that they feel uncomfortable in school.
This would be the absolute place where you feel safe.
Yes.
Now, I don't want this to sound all horrible. Have you heard from some kids, you know, that doesn't happen in my school?
We have heard from some kids. There's actually a new group that's been established here in Dallas called the Queer Youth Coalition,
mm-hmm.
and they are a coalition of GSA leadership, and they'd like to get more schools. Right now there's only about 12 in their group, and some of them have positive stories, coming out stories. Not everyone's story is as a negative as what
mm-hmm.
the statistics
of course not.
Report.
Well, so what I was going to say is that, again, when I came out, different time, there wasn't an internet, yada, yada, yada. These kids today, are they networking? The trans teens, gay LGBT teens, are they networking? And are they like, okay, because I found a friend or found a group, or, you know, is it working?
It's slow progress. Not every school in Dallas has a GSA.
Mm-hmm.
We were at Pride in Austin 2 weeks ago, and every high school in their school district has a GSA. Here in Dallas, it's not as
progressive. Yeah.
And the ones that do, and I've been to some of these GSAs, there's one in East Dallas, and I forgot which high school it was, 150 kids are members.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, downtown Booker T. Washington does not have a GSA, or they have a small one. And when I've asked the kids there, I've said, you know, why don't you have a GSA at a school like this? And they said, well, our school is the GSA.
Absolutely.
So they feel safe.
Yes.
And so those aren't the kids that you're dealing with, probably.
If you have a GSA, you have to have a sponsor, so you have to have a teacher willing to say that they're an ally. And oftentimes that's not as accepted.
And it has to be something that is initiated by the students. Mm-hmm. The teachers cannot say,
can't initiate.
Let's start a GSA.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I spoke at a GSA, some years ago, actually, out where you live. And there were actually, it was interesting, there were more straight kids there than the gay ones.
Absolutely.
But you know what? There are going to be more straight kids in
school
than
but,
the gay ones.
But I thought it was great because they were reaching out because they wanted to support their gay friends.
And that's what we need. We need more straight allies
we
that
do.
Step up to the plate and say, I'm a straight ally and I still support mm-hmm. equal rights. And
right,
the
right.
more of those that we have, then that's when kids are going to see if they really, truly have support.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so you asked a question that I interrupted.
I already asked it again.
Oh, okay.
But have you found, like, some of the other kids, not just through GSAs, they have found any support through just social media?
Yeah, they find support through each other in social media, but a lot of times it's difficult for them to find who's who because a lot of them are still not out to their families and to their parents or to, you know, friends if they're an athlete or just all of the above. And so what we've heard a lot of kids say is, I just don't know. So a lot of them really feel alone because there's really no networking mm-hmm. that is safe for them to go to and network with each other.
Right.
And I've actually met a girl at a PFLAG meeting, mm-hmm. age 14, who has found support in Google chat groups through Google Plus.
There you go.
Because they have private groups where you have to have individuals accepted to be a participant in the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of our youth also find resources on Tumblr.
So
the resources are out there. Mm-hmm. It's just that I think a lot of kids
just don't know.
They just don't know.
It's not just that they don't know. It's that, well, this is the school I go to. This is the popular kids at the school I go to. And they're trying to be part of that.
One of the largest issues we find with our youth is transportation. Since a lot of them don't have cars, they have to rely on public transportation.
Mm-hmm.
Public transportation doesn't always work on the weekends. They're coming from all over the Metroplex. Oftentimes, youth don't necessarily necessarily have jobs, so they don't have funding to pay for these bus passes.
Right. Some of your events are at Cathedral of Hope, mm-hmm. which is great. There's a train station two blocks away. But you have to live near the train station.
We try to make sure and, we do it on a public transportation yeah. line.
And we're talking about, you know, here in a big metropolitan area. Think about the kids who live in rural areas, really rural
Absolutely.
Areas, who have no transportation. Talk about being isolated. Mm-hmm. I don't know if any of you saw the film that came out two or three years ago about bullying. It was in the movie theaters. And they focused on several different kids who were bullied for various different reasons. But one of them was a lesbian young lady in high school. And it was hard to watch. And she lived in a rural town. She did have the support of her family, but the school just was not having it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you talk about this is a big metropolitan area. The kids who live in the rural areas really have it tough.
A lot of our schools don't even have all-inclusive policies or handbooks.
Yeah.
So that's something that we need to work on as well.
Yeah, even though the bullying law came in several years ago, and they're mm-hmm. supposed, they're still not great
well,
on some of those.
Even the process to document bullying is you have to actually keep a paper trail yourself. You can't just rely on word of mouth. You need to document every instance. You have to be able to have a witness on some of those accounts. Bullying is different than harassment. Harassment happens a one-time instant, and bullying happens for a prolonged period of time.
Mm-hmm. We're going to talk more about that. We're talking to Amanda Robinson and Cosette Kosary from Real Life Connection. We're talking about young kids,
teens,
LGBT teens, and at-risk teens. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
Hi, this is Patty Fink, and you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Lauren Landis. The late Patty Fink is very, very late today.
Very.
And she will be in next week on her way to the parade so that she can be late to the parade. Because the parade starts at 2, we're still on the air at 2, she'll be late.
And we'll talk more about the parade and
It'll be
connection.
Late.
in connection to our guests a little later.
Amanda, you had said Real Life Connection works with at-risk youth, and you're passionate about it because that was you.
Yes.
Tell us your story.
So I grew up in a small town, maybe not too small, according to Cosette, but small enough for me, McComb, Mississippi.
Small town.
Yeah.
And Mississippi is a very liberal state, so I'm sure they were very welcoming to you.
Definitely. And, you know, great news is we had the first teen pride in Mississippi about 2 weeks ago.
Oh, that is
and
awesome.
So, yeah. And
That's
we had
awesome.
A really nice turnout. Lots of families came out. But I was passionate about taking RLC back to Mississippi because I was that kid that grew up in Mississippi that didn't have resources. I was an athlete in high school. My senior year, I started really kind of identifying with who I was, and it became very difficult to find other people that looked like I felt on the inside. Mm-hmm. I had straight parents. I didn't see gay people. I didn't know what gay people looked like. And so, of course, I ended up making some of those bad decisions like these young people that I talk about. Before the age of 23, I was a two-time convicted felon. And
okay, what did you do? Or can you talk about it?
I'm very transparent with it, from selling drugs to bad checks to embezzlement.
Why did you do those things?
I fell in with the wrong crowd, for one. Mm-hmm. Two, it was survival. Because I only had a high school education, my resources were limited as far as a living for myself. Mm-hmm. So I basically was living in poverty. My senior year of high school, I dropped out and I worked at McDonald's on the weekends, and I worked at a chicken plant during those school days. Mm. And so when you come from very few resources, you begin to try to just make other avenues that you can.
And how did your parents play a role in this? When did you even talk to them?
They weren't accepting at first.
Mm-hmm.
It was very difficult for my mother. Of course, she took blame. She felt like it was her fault. She felt like it was something she had done wrong as a parent. And just our communication was broken as a whole. I didn't feel like I could trust her with who I was to a certain degree and things that I had gone through. And so I had experienced a lot of sexual molestation as a young kid. Mm. And so when I got to become 18, 19 years old, and started identifying with my orientation, it just felt like one more thing to throw me under the bus, kind of. Just one more notch under my belt that wasn't going to help me be successful.
Mm-hmm. What turned you around? Because it's real easy. One thing happens and then something worse.
My number one thing that I say to all young people is that we're one decision away, you know, from making a difference. And I actually got a job in sales and didn't know that I was great in sales. And I was able to take the same entrepreneurial mindset that I had in selling drugs, in selling cars. And
you see, there was a benefit to selling drugs.
Absolutely. And so it was pretty much the same structure, just a different product. And I didn't have anybody, I didn't have a mentor.
And how odd is that?
That is.
That you would have taken that and understood that I'm using these skills for something bad, I can use these skills to do something good.
Absolutely.
Most people wouldn't make that leap.
No. Yeah.
So that's great that you did.
Yeah.
So how old were you when you made that change in your life?
I was actually 26 when I made that change. Mm-hmm. And it was right after I got sentenced for the two felonies. They happened when I was a minor, young adult, but it didn't go to court until I was like 25. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up with a year of house arrest and 9 years probation.
Mm.
And the harsh reality was I tried to get my record expunged. I tried to, you know, get it sealed. And it was the two felonies that I ended up with were felonies that I couldn't do either one with.
Ooh.
The only way I could clear my record was to get a pardon by the governor. And he only issued 5 a year. And it cost like $5,000 just to even be able to be on the list for possible pardon. And so,
because pardons are something that you buy?
I was going to say, that's news to me. I did not know that it costs.
In Mississippi?
It's not something that you buy, but you definitely need some legal representation.
Yeah,
and so legal representation probably run you somewhere around $5,000 for that type of representation. And so so I realized that this was something that was going to stick with me forever. And although I could be transitioned, if you looked at my background on paper, that could be the one thing that would make you not want to hire me, make you not want to allow me to live in your property.
Have you had problems renting an apartment?
Of course I
have.
Yeah, I still have problems to this day, and my felonies are over 15 years old, and I haven't been in any more trouble since I was a young adult.
Right.
But it's still something that I still struggle with on a daily basis.
How do you deal with it? Do you just bring it up
up
front?
Of course, okay, I'm just transparent, you know, now with it. But one of the ways to not deal with it is to become your own boss.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Right. Right. Well, and again, interesting that you took what you were doing that was illegal and turned that into something entrepreneurial, not just took a job in sales, but then found that, let me just do my own.
I mean, I started a babysitting company when I was like 12. I started babysitting for military families and stuff like that. And once again, didn't know that I was a business owner. Mm-hmm. I just saw it as a little way to make money. And then when I turned 19, 20, I opened up a talent agency. I was interested in music. I was interested in modeling. I was interested in entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it didn't take me long to figure out that there was no market in Mississippi for the field. But I still had that drive to want to run my own business or to be my own boss.
Yeah.
And I just didn't know. I just didn't it didn't click for me initially that, you know, just do something different.
Earlier I spoke with, or I said that when I went and spoke with the GSA, I was surprised at how many, most of the kids there were actually straight. You're one of those kids, Cosette.
I am one of those.
How did you get
kids.
Involved in this?
Yeah,
tell
because
us your story.
Your story is as dramatic and heart-wrenching, isn't it?
I got involved with Real Live about a little over a year ago, and I came in under the pretense that I would be helping with some branding. Now I pretty much do everything.
I could see Amanda said, "You want to do brand? Sure, you'll come in. You'll do a little bit of brand.
She told
sure,
me,
that's
she
what
always
I do."
Says that she can't get rid of me, but I'm stuck with her. But I really fell in love with Real Life because of all of the different demographics that we touch. I've always been into giving back to the community. I've been doing community service since I was 12. I graduated from high school with an IB diploma, and I had to get 50 CAS hours in terms of community service. And
what is an IB diploma?
It's an international baccalaureate. Right.
Okay.
And there's several high schools in the Dallas area that offer this programming.
Yeah, one of my high schools, the high school I graduated from, offers
you have
that.
To have 150 hours, but the hours can count towards different things, creativity, action, and service. And I actually really have a passion for homelessness as well as depressed youth. I was one of those depressed youth growing up. So
you really do identify with
I do identify a lot
of these kids. Yeah.
And see, I think one of the things a lot of people get twisted about Real Life, we're not a gay-based organization. We're a youth-based mm-hmm. organization. And so our focus is mm-hmm. to work with all youth. We just currently have...
Oh, you're straight? No, we can't help you.
Well, yeah, absolutely. We currently have a focus on LGBT youth because of mm-hmm. the immediate need and the statistics. But we want to be able to offer services mm-hmm. to straight youth mm-hmm. Just as much as LGBT youth.
Sure. Sure.
Well, in high school, I was one of those kids who was friends with everyone, and my best friend was a teen mom, and one of my other friends was homeless. So it really, mm-hmm. those issues really speak to me as well.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up outside Austin in Leander.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's not a poor area.
Not at all.
At all. And you have homelessness and teen moms and all that, no matter where you are.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some family stuff. Again, I was connected through you all to one of my LGBT family groups, and you all are going to have, as part of the Pride Parade next week, you're going to have a Pride Zone.
Family Pride Zone
and teen. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about that.
Family Pride Zone is, it takes place in the park. And there's a specific dedicated area for LGBT families with kids. They're going to have resources, activities for your kids to do, a parent's corner to relax and connect with parents as well. That is going on from, I believe, noon to 8 p.m.
Oh, cool. Plenty of time for me to get there.
Yeah. And they'll have some form of entertainment for the kids. We're trying to get some clowns to come out, face painters, just different activities, jump houses.
And you know, I'm excited to go to this because, as a gay parent, I try to make sure that my child is around other mm-hmm. LGBT families, if for no other reason, just to let her know she's not the only one who has two dads or mm-hmm. somebody else who has two moms. Can you talk a little bit about maybe?
Yeah. There's an organization called Rainbow Roundup. They have about, I believe, a little over 1,000 families, and mm-hmm. they connect monthly to do activities so that way LGBT parents can introduce their kids to other kids with LGBT parents. And they actually have an event today. There's a pool party, and that is why Kimberly Cantor can
join
us today.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's awesome. And do you have the information? I mean, if there's any LGBT parents listening.
Definitely find them on social media.
There's a private group. If you find Kimberly Cantor on social media, she can add you to the group.
Right. It's a great group.
Okay. So I want to go back to At Risk Youth. And what some of the things, some of the interventions that you can do that'll help them?
Some of the programming that we have at Real Life is we're going to be starting community classes at the local libraries, mm-hmm. And we're going to offer classes like how to eat off of $2.
Okay, so these are life skill things.
Life skill classes.
That is
or
awesome.
Survival skill classes.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
We also are always looking for our mentors, the opportunity to connect youth interested in certain fields with those people, to that way they can maybe establish connections.
Once again, what's the age group that you do?
We focus from 13 to 19.
Okay,
however, we oftentimes end up with quite a few 20-year-olds.
Well, you know.
They're right there on the cusp.
They're right there, and, you know, there isn't a whole lot for them, and, yeah. Just because yesterday I was 19 and today I'm 20 doesn't
Absolutely.
Mean that all of a sudden I'm mature. You know, yesterday kid, today mature. No.
Right.
But some of the mentoring, So that would be like for the 18, 19-year-olds mostly,
right,
wouldn't
right.
it?
For instance, recently we had a girl who was accepted to SMU on a nursing scholarship, and she showed up to school and didn't identify with anyone that she was classmates with. She generally identifies as a stud, and everyone in her program was a pretty little preppy nursy girl. Mm-hmm.
According to her.
Yes. And,
well, and whether or not she was actually, and they are actually, mm-hmm. that's how she saw herself.
That's
she saw herself,
herself
as
right. saw herself
being
as
on the outside.
Not fitting in with what the other students look like. And so she just felt like it wasn't a good fit for her.
So what
and
happened?
So we actually reached out to Rainbow Roundup and put out a post on their social media, and we got several responses from individuals in the field who were sending her words of encouragement. And
offering, you know, any type of advice as far as if she could call them if she wanted to ask questions about her classes or just anything. They've already been where she's trying to go.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the things that we try to focus on is to connect you with someone who's currently doing something that you're trying to do. Because you don't go to the heart doctor for your lungs. I mean, for your eyes. So, you know, it's kind of hard to take advice from someone who hasn't lived it or done it,
mm-hmm.
you know? So it just makes it that much more powerful to a young person when they physically see you doing what they're trying to do.
Now, nothing against SMU, but why did she choose that school?
She actually got accepted on a whim. Her friends were joking around and decided that they would just apply to big schools, and she got a full ride.
Oh.
Wow.
Okay, so this isn't something she has that full ride. It's not something that she can easily say, eh, I don't fit in here. You know what? Let me visit a few more schools this year and see.
Yeah, she didn't even. She was one of those youth who didn't even see herself as going to school.
Mm.
School wasn't even an option, at the time for her.
Yeah, I have to tell you, if she not only got accepted but got a full ride at SMU, that's not something you just want to turn away.
Absolutely.
Right. No, but that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So she needs to learn to adjust to SMU as opposed to, you know, lots of kids transfer. She has that full ride. She can't just transfer.
Right,
absolutely.
Right.
Yeah,
and, you know,
yeah.
not only she adjusts to SMU, SMU needs to learn how to adjust to her.
That's true.
You know, she's there to make a difference in one way or the other.
Absolutely.
But you know what? You're an incoming freshman. You probably didn't have a whole lot of support at home and in school,
mm-hmm.
although
mm-hmm.
enough that she's must be a bright kid if she got that full scholarship.
Right. Very bright.
Okay, I'm at SMU. I need some help.
Right.
You need somebody who knows how to negotiate SMU to find it.
Right.
You know, where is it? Because there's on-campus help for somebody
right.
like her.
And I think, and if I'm not mistaken, I believe SMU does have a GSA.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was some of the resources that we provided.
And a wonderful center, the Women's
mm-hmm.
Center, which is also where the LGBT,
yes.
and she needs to connect in there, too, mm-hmm. Just to go in and say, help me.
Yeah, I mean,
here,
SMU,
help me. And
SMU definitely has resources.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, that's great for her. And that's the great thing about how social media can work mm-hmm. in a great way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
So what other types of mentoring are people doing?
So we have...
I know you're a fairly new group, so when I say this, it's not like, oh, well, yeah, we have decades of experience doing this. But
well,
what are some of the things you're looking for?
We have an event today, actually, at 4 p.m. Mm-hmm. at Cathedral Hope
mm-hmm.
In their Interfaith Peace Chapel, which we call Inspirational Sunday. And it's our way to inspire young people to come back to the place where some of them were hurt. A lot of young people have been hurt by church. And so because of that, they don't want to be involved or be around it. And so, you know, one of the things that we try to do to empower them is to bring them back and empower them so that they see themselves as survivors versus victims. And we bring out youth keynote speakers. It's a youth-led, youth-based service. It's very non-traditional.
Mm-hmm.
It's not churchy at all. And so we have a lot of community individuals that come out and perform, and they just want to inspire each other. And so this year we have Anthony Maynard as our keynote mm-hmm. speaker. He is 20 years old and works in corporate insurance.
Mm-hmm.
We have Ashton Page, who was also a keynote for us this year. She is 16 years old and she goes to L.D. Bell High School, and she is...
What a wonderful experience to be a keynote speaker at the age of 16. That's
absolutely
great.
And so we want to empower them. We want to be able to give them a platform so that they can show leadership, and also hopefully it inspires other young people to see, I want to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to be on that platform. I want to be able to make decisions with my life that makes someone want to single me out and say, come and be a keynote speaker. Mm-hmm.
But that experience of getting up and speaking in front of a group like that, most kids don't get that.
And that's awesome that they're hearing it from other fellow teens
or young adults. I'm more compelled to listen if it's someone that looks like me versus I hear adults talking to me all day long at school.
Right.
I hear adults talking to me, you know, constantly with my parents. And so kids begin to kind of tune it out. I kind of went back to that place when I was 15, 16. And I grew up in church, of course, in Mississippi. And so church kind of got to the point that it was repetitive. Mm-hmm. And so I felt like if it was someone like me talking to me, then I was more compelled to listen.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of times when adults talk to teenagers, they talk down at them.
They do.
Teenagers really just want to be treated like an adult, even though they're not necessarily at that age where they are an adult. They want to transition into being treated like an adult.
Sure.
Right, absolutely.
That's the best way to help a kid, really, by just talking to them.
Our motto is meet them where they are.
Yeah. We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Laron Landis. Patty Fink has the week off. She'll be back next week. Our guests are from Real Life Connection, Amanda Robinson and Cosette Kozari. We'll be right back. Did I say that wrong again?
Kozari.
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 It's okay. Just call me Cosette.
We'll be right back right after this.
I'm Michael from UNT, and I listen to Lambda Weekly on KNON 89.3 FM.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Laron Landis. We are talking to Amanda and Cosette about Real Life Connection, about at-risk youth, about some upcoming events.
I wanted to go back to, which I think is the foundation of the problems for a lot of at-risk youth, and that is it starts at home with the parents or their caregivers, whoever they're living with as minors. I know you can't legally do anything, as David, proposed, and that, which I think is a good idea.
You can do that. It takes attorneys.
But it takes attorneys, but just, you know.
That are going to say, I've had enough of this. I'm tired of taking care of these kids. Their parents are going to take responsibility for their own kids.
Right. So has anyone thought of, or have you all thought of, actually trying to actually go and talking to some of these parents?
Well, what we've done is created a sensitivity training. And what we're going to do with that sensitivity training is it's going to be offered to the public.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have connected with organizations like PFLAG.
Black Trans Men. Some of the different churches in the area.
And so our goal is to, in this sensitivity training, is to bring up and address some of the issues. A lot of times it's just a lack of education and a lack of information from a parental standpoint, as well as an administrator, as well as, a business. If you work now, if you work with the general public just as a whole, you know, if say you're a bank teller, and Stacy is standing in front of you with Stan's ID. Sometimes it can take up to 3 years before the ID actually matches the person if they're transitioning.
Right.
And so if you're running a business and you're working with the public, depending on how you respond to that individual is going to determine if they stay your customer. It's going to determine if you may get a discrimination lawsuit. It's going to determine on if their friends and family stay customers of yours. So it's all based off of how educated you are and what your responses are and how you make people feel welcomed and all and included.
Because I was thinking about that video that came out, I think it was earlier this year, and it went viral. This young man, I think he's 19 now, but at the time he was 17 or 18, and he secretly filmed himself coming out. And his stepmom and dad and some relatives just literally went off, and it got violent. And he has since then provided a home. He's gotten a scholarship to college, so it really turned out in his favor. But that's not the case for everybody.
Not at all.
And I just think if something, and I know some of these parents are so hostile about the LGBT thing that you can't even approach them, or you probably would put yourself in danger. But the ones who are just, like you said, just need some education, who are just willing to at least listen, maybe there's a way to, let's go and knock on their door and go to them and say, hey, you know, your kid doesn't need to be on the street. I understand
I think
that.
Sometimes, too, parents need a little time to grieve because they have thought that their child might produce heirs or, and not saying that LGBT individuals can't have kids now, but they...
That's the preconceived idea.
What they had dreamed of for their kid all of a sudden is now changing.
And I get that.
And my mom said that to me. You know, she told me like I said, we have a great relationship. She's actually here visiting from Mississippi for Pride. And
That's wonderful.
Yeah, she comes every year now.
Oh, so she's made a turnaround.
Yes,
that's awesome. That's
awesome. She's like everybody's mom now.
That's awesome.
And so, I mean, I'm so grateful to have her, you know, and our relationship is growing. And it's building now, but she has even come to me now and said, I've always known, even when you were a little kid, I knew, but it just wasn't what I wanted for
you. You know, I was at a PFLAG meeting years ago, and they used to have a speaker and then break up into groups. And so we were talking in one of the small groups, and one of the moms was there, and she said, you know, my son told me on Friday, and I was upset during the weekend. So I decided to come to the meeting tonight, and, you know, I just hope he realizes that I'm not rejecting him or anything. And like you said, Cosette, about, you know, sometimes you need a little bit of time to grieve. So I said to this mom, I said, he told you on Friday, he's probably been thinking about it for a year or two. You've known for 3 days now, because she really didn't seem to have any idea that he was gay before this. So you've known since Friday, and you came to a PFLAG meeting today. That's the most loving thing you could have done. If he has a problem with it, I want you to have him call me, because I'm going to tell him to back off.
Absolutely.
Because this was a mom who was really trying. Yeah. She was trying to understand.
And those parents who take the first step to actually show up at a PFLAG meeting, they're more than halfway there.
Oh,
if you can actually get up and take
90% of the way
You're more than halfway there already.
Yeah, and one of the things we found out about PFLAG is that the preconceived idea for a lot of people is that it's parents who actually are just all very supportive, but PFLAG is actually an organization that is for parents who are having a hard time dealing.
Right.
But you need the support of parents there
to
work with the new parents.
But you know, I'm talking about there probably needs to be a pre-PFLAG.
Yeah.
For those parents who you can't even hold a conversation with, that are just so out there and, you know, just blatantly homophobic and, like, you know, get out of my house, literally throw your stuff out. Those are the ones who need to be talked to. Like, we need to go knock on their door. You know, I understand that you're upset. You need a grieving period. You're entitled to have your opinion about it. But your kid is on the street.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the kids those parents need to be talked to.
And the way, in my world, the way that works is you can either take him back in. I don't care how much you talk for the next week or two, but you better start talking. Or you can pay for his hotel. Which would you like? And it's not going to be some flea bag. You're going to pay for a nice hotel for this kid.
Yeah.
And meals.
Sounds like a good option, too.
And transportation to school. And, But that's in my world. But that's what I would love some attorneys to start working on, that no, you don't have a right to throw your kid out just because you don't like your kid's sexual orientation. No. Or their gender identity.
Right.
Sorry. It's your kid. You know, you were talking a little bit about church and how churches have, in some cases, really damaged some kids.
Yeah.
And I've spoken to a number who have...
You're about to be married to one.
Well, exactly. I mean, we went up to visit some of my family in Colorado. And after we were there a couple of hours, just having fun with some cousins, some of them I hadn't seen in 20 years. One of these cousins I hadn't seen in 20 years, Brian said to her, I just never had a family like this, because he was also thrown out of school, you know, all that kind of stuff. But I've never had a family like this. She just put her arm around him and said, well, now you do.
That's amazing.
You know, which is just nice.
Awesome.
But it's what I'd expect from my family. Is there anything you can do for kids who are going with their parents to a really hateful church, a very unsupportive church that is, you know, and I'm not church bashing at all, because there are some wonderful churches out there that are supportive and nurturing. is there anything you can do? And I'll tell you what I told one kid to do.
Well,
one time
if the child is a minor, realistically, they don't have a lot of say-so.
A choice, right.
They don't
not
have
a lot
choice.
Of options.
You know, they don't have a lot of options. Once again, growing up in Mississippi, we were carried to church. Mm-hmm. We didn't get to say, I don't feel like going today. It was routine. It was not optional. It was, you're going. And so it just was a part of the norm. And so I think especially with us being here in the Bible Belt, there's a lot of young people that's facing that same issue where mm-hmm. they really just don't have a say-so. And the sad part about it is they just have to deal with it until they are old enough to get out and make their own choices. Mm-hmm. And this is probably where some of the runaway issues are coming from as well.
You know, I told one kid at a GSA meeting one time, we were just talking about a whole variety of issues, and she said, you know, in my church, they always, people come up to me and say, you're going to hell, and you know, and really hateful things like that. And she was a strong kid. Mm-hmm. So I said to her, I know you're strong, and you know you're better than that. So next time somebody walks up to you and tells you you're going to hell, mm-hmm. I want you to turn around and in the same tone that they said to you, you're going to hell, I want you to say to that person, how dare you judge me?
Right.
How dare you? Mm-hmm. And then just turn around, go sit down and enjoy your church service, because you're not there for this person's judging of you. You're there for your own spiritual mm-hmm. fulfillment.
Well, and another thing is, here in Dallas, there are several different denominations that do have all-inclusive churches.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
So it might even be something where you could suggest to your parents, like, let's go try out this church. It might be the same denomination, mm-hmm. but have an all-inclusive service.
A good example of that is the Methodist Church. Mm-hmm. There are Methodist churches in Dallas that are absolutely violently opposed to same-sex marriage, you know, and have filed charges against people from other churches because they're supporting. And then there are Methodist churches that are so welcoming and embracing and loving. Mm-hmm. And that's just, you know, mm-hmm. within one denomination. So I hear First Baptist Church downtown is real good for
I hadn't heard of that.
No. Oh, yeah.
No.
Maybe not. Maybe. One of the things that you said was that it's great for kids to hear from other kids mm-hmm. because they're hearing from adults all the time. Right. What do you think of the It Gets Better program?
I think
Helpful?
It's great. I think it needs to be more visual. Mm-hmm. I think mm-hmm. We need to have more adults saying it gets better. We need to have more allies. We need to have more of us in the community. One of the things that we talk about a lot in the community is this is one of the first civil rights movements that has yet to include young people. Mm-hmm. And the way that we start including them is by empowering them and by inspiring them and telling them it does get better. Mm-hmm. We were you. Mm-hmm. So we do know what it feels like to...
And giving them a platform to share their stories.
Absolutely.
Because
right.
their stories are just as important as all of ours.
Yeah.
And, you know, I love the message of It Gets Better because it's a very general term, but going deeper, it means, you know, I wish, you know, we could just grab some of these teens and give them a hug and say, just hold on.
Yeah.
Just hold on. I know today feels like it's going to last forever.
Yeah, definitely.
But it's not.
Yeah.
It just hold on. Mm-hmm. You know, I felt like that in high school. You know, not that I had any extreme situations, but, you know, there was some clash between my father and I. And just like, okay, I'm not going to be in this house forever. I will graduate. Just hold on. Just mm-hmm. hold on. It will get better.
One of the things that we do on our social media is we post what's called the Cup of Confidence, and it's a daily post. And in some of those posts, a lot of times that we say, you know, one bad day doesn't mean you have a horrible life.
Exactly.
You know, it's just one bad day. Mm-hmm. And so we try to inspire and encourage through those daily mm-hmm. posts as well so that, you know, if they are feeling bad or they are having mm-hmm. a bad day, they can go to the Real Live Connection social media and they can find some inspiration and they can find that boost or that build up that they may not be able to have physically, but just reading something sometimes can give you a different mindset and you can take on that mindset and your
right.
whole day can change.
Mm-hmm. Now, does Real Life Connection have a website or is it just a page?
We do.
What
we
is
have
that?
A website. It's rlc365.org. And then our social media site is @rlc365.
Okay.
Okay. Please visit.
Yeah. Please visit.
And if you know a kid that's in this sort of situation,
send them over.
Send them to Teen Pride next weekend.
Yes. Yeah,
tell us about Teen Pride next weekend.
Teen Pride is on September 19th. It's going to be at the Cathedral of Hope on the grounds. There will be bounce houses, entertainment, and resources, from HIV testing to Job Corps comes out, and we'll pass out some of their information as well. Fiat is going to bring some cars.
Oh, nice.
We'll have food vendors and entertainment. There will be a drag show.
I have to say, we got a pretty cool drag show lineup this year. Kennedy Davenport from RuPaul's Drag Race.
Oh, nice.
So I think it's going to be really cool for the kids to come out and really... They want to be exposed to the same thing that we get, but they can be, just without all the other stuff.
Right.
Sure.
Well, and we want to keep them out of the club, so we bring the shows to them.
Absolutely.
Good thinking.
Yeah, I mean, they're not allowed in the bars, so
without fake IDs.
So. Right. And so we want to prevent the fake IDs.
What are some of the other events that you have coming up, or types of things that you're planning over the next year? Yeah.
Well, Teen Pride is free. Then we're having a Youth Day of Remembrance. We're hoping to do it at the end of this month. It's going to be a celebration of life for the individuals who have committed suicide or have been victims of homicide, ages 0 to 21. So far, the list of names is about 25 names.
That's 25 too many names.
Yes, it is.
You know, exactly. And unfortunately, we don't see there's so much bad news on the news. But this is a group that we definitely don't hear about in the media.
So we're hoping to do a vigil service for them, as well as have a keynote speaker.
Mm-hmm. And also for kids who've had that bad experience with religion, having a positive, I mean, it'll be a very sad service, but having a positive service that deals with people who've had their issues.
Absolutely.
And saying, yeah, religion does care about you.
This year, we're really trying to bring the attention to it. Next year, we'd like to actually have vendors and resources out for individuals who are struggling with depression and mental health to connect to resources in the community for that.
You're working with some of the GSAs.
Yes.
Is there anything that we can do to help encourage more GSAs in Dallas high schools to form?
We have to let students know that it's an option. They can do it, and they need to hook up with the QYC. They are currently putting together a handbook on how to create your own GSA.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to get as many going as we possibly can. As Cosette mentioned earlier, we want to definitely get to where Austin is, you know, with a GSA in every high school, every junior high, and now even three or four middle schools in Austin with GSAs. And so it's very imperative that we begin to reach them very young, so then they begin to build that self-esteem and that confidence and that motivation to get out and be successful taxpaying citizens.
And Dallas shouldn't be that hard to do it in. Dallas-Fort Worth. But you have some of those suburban districts where the mindset is you're recruiting these kids.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
What do you do there? And that's one last question, because we're just about out of time. Is there anything that you can do?
All you can really do is point the kids in the direction of resources. Make them aware of that they can change policies within their schools. It's just a matter of connecting with those resources.
Yeah. Since kids come and go in a school, once the GSA is established and there is an advisor, can that advisor continue the GSA even if there's not one
Oftentimes
student?
Oftentimes they'll pass on leadership. So they have a board of elections every year where they elect their advisory board president, vice president, secretary.
And I'm thinking in a school that has a GSA, but it's marginal. You know, it's just a small one.
Well, right. And the thing, too, is you start a GSA when you're a freshman. You go 4 years. Well, you have 4 years to try to recruit younger individuals to be part of your GSA.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then they have more time to get individuals.
Yeah. And any last thoughts?
Bring them out to Teen Pride. Connect with us. Fort Worth is coming as well. So all of those people that are in the Fort Worth
and
area.
Your website is rlc365.org.
Yes.
And you can find you there.
Yes. Find us and all of the information.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, ladies. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.